Welcome to the Mother Forkin' Podcast. Where we feed you some real shit on parenting.
So today we have a really special guest on and talking about a topic that we haven't yet discussed on this podcast, which is crazy because we are on episode 51. So you would think that we would already have tackled this, but I'm very grateful. We are very grateful to have her on. Her name is Holly Tecco, and she's the founder and CEO of Natalist, which is a company that reshapes the way millennial women manage their fertility. And briefly, Natalist is a women's health startup making beautiful science-backed conception essentials to help the modern woman confidently prepare for pregnancy and definitely increase their chances of conceiving each month.
Yes, we are so excited to have Haley today. She is a women's health advocate and health investor, obviously. So we just want to go ahead and dive into the subject. So hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for coming on. So could you tell us a little bit about your background and how this amazing company came to be?
Yeah, so I've spent most of my career in the healthcare space. So I'm no stranger to healthcare and through my own experiences, also the fertility space. And I had been investing in healthcare through a fund that I ran in San Francisco called Rock Health, and became especially passionate about consumer health and all the changes that were happening in the industry to really empower patients to own their own journey, make their own health decisions in a more educated, empowered fashion. Then through kind of my own health issues, really opened my eyes to the women's health space and the opportunity there. And as you know, most startups are run by men, and most investors are men. And so they really were missing out on this opportunity in women's health. And it was really rather behind some of the other sectors within healthcare. But I looked at that and I said, well, that's an opportunity because there's so much white space, because I know intimately the different women's health issues from my own experience, from my, I also have, almost have my MPH with a concentration in women's health, just saw that this industry was ripe for change and founded Natalist, not too long ago. I've been working on it for maybe a year and a half. We launched 8 months ago to really address some of the pitfalls that I experienced in buying products and attempting to get pregnant for many, many, many years.
And can you explain what those pitfalls were that you faced?
Yeah. So the biggest really is education. We spend our entire adult lives until we want to get pregnant, trying not to get pregnant. So most of our teens and 20s, we're attempting not to get pregnant. All of sex ed is really focused on that. So when it comes time, you really don't have a baseline of understanding of fertility, of your fertile window. I really honestly used to think that you could get pregnant any time of the month. And I think a lot of women thought that. And so there's a baseline of education that is not a given in our educational system. And so we believe that there's an opportunity for us to help women navigate the basic questions, as well as some of the tricky troubleshooting that some people face around how conception happens, how to increase your chances of conceiving, and really prepare for a healthy pregnancy. So that's kind of the one thing that we kind of saw as an opportunity to build a brand and build products, but with a base of education. The other problem that really irked me, especially as I became more knowledgeable, was the sheer amount of junk science and products that are peddled to women. We see this in really every area of women's health, from really unhealthy detoxes to, you know, the birth control cleanse, which is just totally bogus. You don't need a birth control cleanse. And so really trying to cut through the crap and give women things that are evidence-backed and really rooted in science and not just fluff to waste money on. So that was kind of second issue. that we really wanted to address is just building an honest company that would provide, you know, true products that actually work. We actually have a part of our website called What We Don't Sell, and we list kind of the products that really, in our minds, don't pass science class. They don't actually have any efficacy. And then the third part is really a little bit more superficial, but I felt like the products that I was buying, pregnancy tests, fertility lubricant, basal thermometers, everything I bought really felt quite clinical and wasn't a delightful user experience. And so we wanted to bring the same sort of customer-centered approach and beauty that you see in other categories. So I don't know, like makeup or shampoo, you know, packaging that's really beautiful, products that are easy to use, and bring that sort of design to these products that still are clean.
We love that. This is Celeste speaking. Go ahead. Remember when...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, we were having a little bit technical. But I was just going to say that we love that because Celeste speaking, when my husband and I tried, you know, to conceive, I remember, it, like you were saying, it's a stressful period where you're just not too sure. I mean, like going back to the health 101 of when that fertile window is, like we're just guessing off of like calendars and then what you see on Google and like, you know, all these things that you're kind of looking up, the thermometer. And so it wasn't until I kind of went more into I'm not too sure, you might have to correct me on the testing of like the, you know, the things you pee on to see if to see if you're fertile. Like I was actually off compared to the calendar. So could you tell us more about your products?
Yeah,
because that was something that was new to me.
Yeah, I mean, so testing, so understanding your fertile window is obviously a big piece of timing conception. So you're supposed to have intercourse leading up to your ovulation, which is when the egg is released and can be fertilized. And so there are a couple of ways to understand when this is happening. Your body gives you signs to tell you when you are about to ovulate. One of the signs is increased cervical mucus. So you can track kind of how your cervical mucus is changing. And once it's kind of sticky and like egg whites is really the time leading up to ovulation, but that can be kind of difficult. So you really want to combine that with some other methods. Another method is looking at your basal body temperature. That is also, you know, not perfect because it's actually a lagging indicator of it kind of is after you ovulate. So it kind of is a little too late. And so we really recommend tracking your luteinizing hormone, which is the hormone that is that peaks right before ovulation. So it really is the best indicator that you're about to ovulate. And so we sell ovulation tests. We're certainly not the only ovulation test maker out there. This is a product that has been on the market for a while. We try to make ours as easy to use as possible. And we provide, you know, 7 ovulation tests. So you really have almost a week where you can test and see if your ovulation is increasing, so that, or not your ovulation, your LH is increasing, which really indicates your LH surge and that you're about to ovulate. So it's a pretty easy way. And I think it's especially powerful when you combine it with these other methods and can really help people pinpoint, you know, when's the optimal time to have intercourse. That being said, when you track, I think body literacy is very important. Getting in tune with your body and its own rhythms is a big part of, you know, empowering your journey, but you don't want to take it so far that you lose some of the romance in making a baby. So, you know, I think there's a balance between being empowered and knowing your cycle and knowing your body, but like still allowing, you know, not being like, oh my gosh, on the clock, we need to go right now. Cause that can really be a bummer on a relationship when you're, when you're like timing it and it's not romantic anymore.
What about stress? Does that really play a huge role in whether or not you can get pregnant?
Such a good question. So it's obviously something that a lot of people believe that stress can impact your fertility, but there are a lot of women in very high stress living situations that get pregnant unwillingly, unknowingly. And so I don't think that data would support in general that stress plays a role. And when you're dealing with infertility, when people ask you that, like, oh, you just need to like take time off your work and de-stress, you know, probably if you're dealing with infertility, you have another issue and it's probably not stress related. It's probably something more biological. So I don't have a good answer for that other than, you know, stress isn't good for any of us. So we should detox our lives of stress, you know, period. But I think if you're facing infertility, it's unlikely that stress is the reason you're not getting pregnant.
Yeah. And the only reason why I asked that, and maybe it's just coincidental for me, is because I have two boys, and both times that I got pregnant was when I was not working. I was on vacation. And I was just totally like, I felt in Zen mode and I was just laid back and stressed out. So, or stress-free. So I was asking that.
Well, stress might also lead to more sex, and you need sex to have, you know, to get pregnant for if you're and have
the sex. That's so true.
So it might be, you know, it might be related, but in a different way.
Very true. Good point there.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about PCOS. So for some of our listeners that don't know, could you tell us about that? I know that's we know several people that have been diagnosed with that, and they're, you know, concerned about pregnancy in the future and things like that. Could you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome, and it's one of a couple of like hormone disorders that is relatively common. I wish I had the exact number. It might be like 10%. So you probably know someone who has PCOS, and it can, it's a syndrome. So it's not something that you can just get, you know, blood tests and have a yes, no. It's made up of multiple symptoms that may appear at once. You might have a couple of symptoms. So for me with PCOS, the things that have shown that I have PCOS would be, I have an irregular period. So my cycle is sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. It's been really hard to track throughout, you know, since I was in my 20s, as well as, you know, sometimes really heavy periods. For me, I also have polycystic ovaries, which is, you know, follicles around the eggs that you can really only see with an ultrasound. So it's something that has, those have been diagnosed. I know a lot of women with PCOS have extra body hair, certain like acne patterns. So, you know, there are a bunch of, I fortunately haven't had that. I have a lot of body hair because I'm Italian. It's unrelated, but, or maybe it is. But it's something that a lot of folks face, and the exact cause is really not known. And there really is no, you know, catch-all treatment with women. You really can only treat the symptoms. So you can have medications. I think they probably just put people on some combination of different hormones to kind of help you regulate your hormones. I've heard of women go on birth control. I personally have only been on medications for it when I was trying to get pregnant, which helps you ovulate. So they're very common fertility drugs. Clomid is probably the most common, and it helps you to make sure that you're ovulating. It helps induce ovulation. So, you know, the other thing with PCOS is that often it comes with weight gain. So sometimes lifestyle changes can help manage PCOS. So that's, you know, something, and anyways, if you're trying to get pregnant, you should, you know, try to be your healthiest version of yourself anyways. So I think that's good advice for anyone, but certainly if you have weight issues related to PCOS, then it is important to address them. It's something that's so common that, you know, there are many, many Facebook groups talking about PCOS. I've been in some of them, and it's really easy to talk to other patients. And I think that's a great, you know, thing to be able to have others that you can kind of discuss these things with. And then of course, you know, your physician, your OB would have great resources for you if it's something that you suspect or have been diagnosed with.
Now, I'd like to look at the other gender. So males. It's not, infertility isn't just a female thing. It can also fall on the male spectrum. Correct. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. A little bit? Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's really something that we don't talk about enough. We're doing later this month, a male fertility focus, because we do think that we've been spending a lot of time talking about female fertility and the things that we face. And obviously men are half the equation and commonly, you know, facing issues. I think it's a third of infertility is attributed to the women and a third is attributed to men. And then the other third is kind of a combination. So men are just as much to blame as we are. It's just very different for men because sperm regenerates. A lot of, you know, male issues related to sperm can be improved. So that's the good news. And, you know, there are a lot of parameters to sperm health, and I'm by no means an expert, but I have spent some time, because we are working on a collaboration with a sperm analysis company, on kind of the basics of, you know, sperm volume, sperm concentration, motility. There are kind of different aspects. I mean, these are swimmers. They have to be healthy to get to the egg. So with anything that comes up with male fertility, a lot of times it can be solved with lifestyle interventions. So, you know, alcohol, like cutting out alcohol and smoking and diet. Other times, I don't know how common it is for medical interventions, but there are, you know, surgeries and medications that men can take. If there's like a blockage, then you need a medical intervention. I would say a lot of times I've heard from women who do IVF or do other fertility treatments because of an issue with the sperm. And with IVF, they're able to do something called ICSI, which I don't know what it stands for, but it kind of helps select the right sperm and inject the sperm into the egg to increase the chances of fertilization.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting. I was going to say, both Megan and I have a background in like personal training. So we're like very big advocates on like living that healthy lifestyle from the get-go. And you said for both partners, could you tell us, like, is there any specifics, like if you're lacking a certain vitamin or diet wise, like what's like the kind of most, I mean, alcohol is a hard one to give up, but what's like the highest thing, you know, suggested?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it is a hard one, especially right now, huh? It's also a controversial one because, you know, some studies show that, you know, a glass of wine is fine, but, kind of the governing body of, you know, the OBGYNs suggests no alcohol at all. I think it's easier for them to draw the line there. It's safer for them to draw the line. So that's kind of where we've suggested that you abstain from alcohol while trying. Also just because if you might not know you're pregnant, and if you're drinking heavily, you know, there could be issues. I would say, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know like which lever is the most powerful to pull. But I would say being in a healthy weight range is critical. And I've seen literature that shows that being overweight is negatively impactful on fertility, but also being underweight. So, and in fact, I think the one study I read said that being underweight is even worse for your fertility, and it takes even longer to get pregnant. So really anything that you can do to get into a healthy weight range where you feel good and you're optimizing your own fertility, and bring your partner along. I feel like this is a chance for you and your partner to become even closer. And if you can kind of have goals that you set together to be healthier, if one partner has given up alcohol and the other hasn't, you know, that can be really difficult. So, you know, men in solidarity, if you can, if your partner, if your wife is giving up alcohol, you should too. Smoking absolutely has very solid evidence that smoking is bad for pregnancy. It impacts fertility. So smoking and alcohol, I think, cut out, and then just focus on that, getting in that healthy weight range.
Thank you.
So now I want to talk a little bit about the emotional and mental aspect of the kind of toll that it can weigh on someone's mind, both female and male. And, you know, obviously it can hurt the relationship as well. But for the folks out there who have a hard time talking about this, you know, mm-hmm. if they might discover like, okay, we've been trying for so long, I'm getting really agitated, what can I do? But first, really, who can I turn to? Who can I talk to? Are there people that you can identify mm-hmm. for our audience?
I would say your friends. You know, my closest friends have been invaluable support system for me throughout my journey. So if there are close people to you that you trust, whether or not they've experienced fertility, whether or not they get it, your friends care a lot about you and want to see you happy and healthy. So I think making sure that you aren't keeping this bottled up inside is really important. You know, there has always been a stigma around infertility, and we're trying to break that stigma by sharing stories and just reminding women that every journey looks different, and your journey might be really long and crappy, or it might be, you know, short and sweet. And, you know, everybody's journey deserves respect and, you know, is all fueled by the same goal and with lots of love. So I think that it's hard for people to speak publicly about it. So we don't realize how common infertility is. And so there's just like this, you know, negative virtuous cycle of people feeling shame because they don't hear others speaking about it. Others don't speak about it because, you know, they feel shame. So, you know, by no means do you have to shout on the rooftops what you're dealing with. But I certainly think talking to your friends and having them there for you is really important. My friends really have been amazing. And I'm so glad that I've been able to just have a shoulder to cry on when I've needed it. It's, you know, on the flip side of that, if you're someone who you suspect that a friend is dealing with infertility, how you talk to them, what you say is really important, and you should use your words carefully. I've heard, you know, people, well-meaning friends say things that can really hurt someone dealing with infertility. The one thing you definitely don't want to do is give suggestions. So, you know, someone who's dealing with infertility and has, you know, been trying for a while, they've probably tried everything. So to say, oh, did you try acupuncture? Did you try, you know, relaxing? You know, generally like is more of an insult because people are like, yes, of course I tried that. Like you think that this is just an easy fix. It's not. So definitely, you know, be mindful of, you know, just because it was easy for you doesn't mean that you're an expert. So really the best thing you can do is be that shoulder and say, I'm sorry, this is unfair. What can I do? How can I help? And whether that's just like bringing them brownies if that's their favorite treat, you know, or, you know, pulling them out, you know, for a jog and, you know, just being there for them and getting them out of their slump. I think that's really, you know, just being there and letting them kind of guide how much they want to share and how they, you know, feel the need to grieve, because it does. I mean, infertility is loss. It comes with grief. And so think about, you know, how you would help a friend who's lost a loved one or, you know, had any sort of something negative happen in their life and, you know, kind of act accordingly.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's why we have this podcast, is to bring awareness to things like this and to let people know that, I mean, even though we are two complete strangers to most of our listeners, we are here if you need an ear or anything, or like what you're offering is your type of advice as well. So thank you.
Yeah, of course.
We love that, especially since I'm sure, like you were saying, the last thing that they want to hear is just don't think about it. Cause you know, this is some people, right? That's like the worst thing you can say to them. So we really appreciate the tips, you know? And so, without diving too deeply into it, could you kind of give us a background? Cause neither Megan nor I have been, you know, through this journey. A lot of people are concerned about like, you know, the expenses of, you know, I mean, I'm not even sure about all the different options you have for infertility. Could you tell us some, you know, about that?
Just a little bit and I'll speak from my personal experience and not as a medical professional. But generally infertility is defined as trying to conceive for 12 months without getting pregnant, or 6 months if you're over 35. So, you know, you're 12 months is a very long time to be trying unsuccessfully. It can be very frustrating month over month getting a negative pregnancy test, especially for women, you know, who like you guys, like, you know, high achievers that kind of are able to manage everything in your life. And all of a sudden there's something you can't control. It's extremely frustrating. But clinics won't see you until you kind of meet that guideline because, you know, it might just be, you know, you've had bad luck and on the 12th month you get pregnant. I think that's a good thing where to start. It's like, you're not medically considered infertile until, you know, that time period trying naturally, unless you face some sort of condition. Had early onset menopause or PCOS. And generally, you know, your OB can actually do a lot. You don't need to see a fertility specialist right away. Your OB can prescribe you some of the medications. I mentioned Clomid, something that I've been on. So if they suspect that there's an ovulation disorder, Clomid can be a good first kind of line of response, and it's relatively affordable. I imagine most health plans covered, or at least, you know, have a copay for it. And so that's kind of where kind of people start. And then there's, you know, the handoff to the fertility clinic. And that's really where things get serious. And there's a bunch of diagnostic tests that a fertility doctor will do, along with just a full history and workup. So what they're really looking for is there something that is obviously wrong that we can fix? Unfortunately, a lot of times infertility is like you have unknown infertility and they don't know why. But so for others, they are able to do diagnostics that will say, oh, you have a blocked tube. And so we just need to unblock it. And in that case, you know, you should be able to conceive naturally. So you'll do an entire workup, lots of poking in. And then, you know, seeing your hormone levels, your hormone levels in combination with an ultrasound, like an invasive ultrasound, can give you an idea of your ovarian reserves. So I've heard of women that have gone into their, you know, appointments having no idea that, you know, they had, you know, where their ovarian reserve levels were. And I've heard of women that their doctors like, oh my gosh, you've gone through early menopause and your ovarian reserves are very low. And so for those women, they have different paths than a woman who has an average, you know, ovarian reserve for her age. So kind of the next step after that would really be like IUI, which is very, very common and not too expensive. I've heard, you know, ranging from $1,500 to $2,500 for IUI. I've gone through many IUIs. It's a very quick procedure. And sometimes they will pair the IUI with the medication. And that's really just they're taking the sperm, they're spinning it around, cleaning it up, and then injecting that right into you. So they're basically helping sperm meet egg. And, you know, a lot of women find success with IUI, which is great because it's an outpatient procedure. It's really, you know, not a huge deal at all for most women. And then the Mac Daddy is IVF. And that really is the last resort for most couples. And IVF is extremely expensive. Probably the best deal you can get on IVF is $15,000. Most couples pay up to $25,000 for a round, and it's not certain. The outcomes, of IVF really aren't, anything to, you know, write home about. We still have a long way to go, but for a lot of couples, it's the only way they really, you know, can get pregnant. And with IVF, it's a months long process involving lots and lots of hormones, an egg retrieval, which is done under anesthesia. And it's, you know, something that you really don't want to do. It's really like the last stop. You don't want to jump to IVF if you don't have to. So I would say to describe kind of the options for infertility, it's expensive, and that's really a shame, because having children in my mind should not be a luxury. It should not be something only accessible to wealthy families. And so it's really disappointing that insurance companies, for the most part, don't cover it and don't make it more accessible.
Yeah, that is a shame, honestly, especially if, I mean, your goal is to mm-hmm. become a parent.
Well, I was just going to say, Thank you for like kind of walking us through that. There's so many different options. And, you know, by us starting off, or for whoever's listening, you know, thinking about this, you know, there's options, there's cheaper options. But going back to your baby, congratulations on that, by the way, Natalis. We saw that you guys got some products out to Target, which, hello, all of our listeners shop there.
Thank you. Go find us in Target. Actually, don't go to the store now because COVID, but you can order on Target.com. Do that.
There you go. Or, you know, directly through your website. Could you tell us some of the products that you have, you know?
I would love to. Thank you. For giving me that opportunity. So I talked about our ovulation tests. We obviously have pregnancy tests as well. They're early pregnancy tests because we are inpatient women. So you can test 5 days before your expected period. We also have a FDA cleared fertility and pregnancy safe lubricant that I'm obsessed with. And it is paraben free, which I think is something quite important right now and something that the FDA cleared lubricants can't claim. So it's kind of makes our product a little bit cleaner and safer. And so we actually just launched that and are super excited about that being on the market. We also have a really, really good prenatal vitamin that meets or exceeds all of the guidelines set forth by the governing medical bodies. So we're very proud of that being something that you should start taking when you're trying a few months before so that your body kind of builds up the necessary minerals to carry a healthy pregnancy. And then we also recently launched a couple of additional supplements. Iron deficiency anemia is very common in pregnancy. And so we are selling carbonyl iron that is 100% elemental. So it's a superior iron that is time released and is easy on the stomach. I have iron deficiency anemia. So I've been taking iron for a long time and a lot of them make me sick and just taste really gross. And I'm really proud of the iron that we sell. And then we also have some educational materials. I think I told you guys about education being kind of core to our mission and something that I identified as missing in the market. And so we have a book called Conception 101 that we wrote for millennial women like us who it's kind of really designed more like a magazine, very easy to consume, but very fact-based. So not like a textbook, but textbook quality information. And then we have another book called Parent Plans, which is a really fun, sometimes serious book of exercises for couples to do while they're, you know, either while they're trying to get pregnant or when they're pregnant. And it just makes sure that they're on the same page on parenting philosophies and budgeting. So it's a really important book for just you're making sure that your relationship is in a rock solid place and you're aligned with everything. So that's where we're at right now. We also are developing new products all the time. So we love to hear from our customers. So if anyone's like, I wish that I had this, but with this, let us know, because we're always looking to our customers for giving us the ideas of what we should develop next.
I love the variety of products that you offer. And now I'm wondering, is it surely it's, if it's being sold at Target, I'm assuming it's not $15,000 a pop. Right?
No, you know, accessibility is really important to us. You know, with my public health hat on, like I, you know, believe that these products should not be luxury goods. They should feel like luxury goods, but should be affordable. So no, our, like our pregnancy test, for instance, we sell at Target, I think it's four of them. And I believe the price they sell it at, they change it a little bit, is like $16, which is like, as you guys know, you know, I think first responses, you get like two pregnancy tests for that price. We're really, you know, trying to make our products accessible to everyone.
Where were you about 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We truly enjoyed having you on. You know, just what you're doing is amazing for all of us, you know, for women out there, for couples out there and their journey into parenthood. Is there any takeaways or any thing that you'd like to say?
I'm here for you. Natalist is here for you. So we'd love to connect with anyone who is on their journey. If you have any questions, we're available, you know, at all times for our customers. So you know, reach out, and I wish you all the best in your journey.
Thank you so much.
And where can people find
you? Natalist.com. We're also on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Natalist Co.